Hey, welcome to an episode of The Ohm Show. My guest today is world-famous Kevin Rose, an entrepreneur, an industry observer, and always an astute investor who's currently a venture partner at True Ventures. So welcome, Kevin.
It's good to be here, old man. I'm glad to be on your show. It's awesome.
I know. It's a funny thing is that it's about 10 years ago, I was doing a show for a company which you had co-founded, Division 3. And I stopped doing that mostly because I just got bored with video too early.
I can't believe that was 10 years ago.
Actually, 11.
That's so crazy.
You know, and to just give people a little context, I met you when you were still an intern at Tech TV. So yeah. I've really seen you grow up. So I've never been to any of your birthday parties. How is that?
You have to come to the next one. Although my next one is actually middle of February, and that's right when I'm having a baby. So I can't invite you to the next one, but after that for sure.
Okay, wow. The baby I knew back then is now having babies, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, seriously.
But it's really great to see you know, evolve from your early days to what you're doing today. So give us a little overview of, you know, where you are and what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, gosh, having been in the Valley since 2000, that's when I first moved out there and started my career out there as a young buck, and then kind of slowly traversed all these different startups and companies and eventually ended up where I am today, which is a combination of doing some investing over at True Ventures, which is awesome. I get to work with people like you, which is always great. And then also kind of pursuing some other applications that I'm building that actually first started off as just really little hobbies to see if anything was there. It was one of those things where I went out and found a developer, this woman named Taylor. She's amazing. And we got together and we were like, okay, well, let's just try a couple little things. So I'm working on both a fasting app, which is now actually just handed the reins off to a full-time CEO because it got to the point where it required some, you know, dedicated resources and attention and actually a team around it because it was growing. And then also working on a meditation app called Oak. And so Oak is my project these days, just really trying to kind of give back in a way that feels a little bit more meaningful for me. I think about some of the products that I created in the past, and while I feel very fortunate that they were successful and grew and became quite large, they also, I don't know, to me, they were kind of, in some cases, just a way to kind of kill and waste some time. And so some of the things that I've kind of been focused on have been more about finding a little bit more balance rather than just being connected to the phone or computer all the time. And then also hopefully helping promote a more healthy lifestyle with things like intermittent fasting through the app Zero.
What's the driving force behind this intentionality in your approach to whether it's applications or life? Is it part of growing up and having children of your own, or is it more to do with the environment we live in today?
Well, I think there's a few things. One is that I've always been fascinated by health and fitness, and it's something that goes way back to even, I guess a great example is the first time I remember really caring about this type of stuff or this like just idea of trying to create the best version of yourself probably goes back to 2000, where it was New Year's. You know, everyone had New Year's resolutions. My friends were making them. I didn't smoke. I didn't do anything that I really wanted to give up. And then I realized, like, you know what? I should probably drink more tea. I've been hearing about this. It's a really healthy thing to do, green tea. And I'm going to give up soda, because I was back in the 90s, you know, as a kid, I was just going through soda like crazy, just like chugging massive big gulps. And it was just kind of my go-to beverage. So I said, okay, I'm going to give it up. And I gave it up in 2000. I haven't had a soda since. And then especially as you get older, you just start to feel it in a bunch of different ways. And you realize that the one thing that we have within our control is our health. And, you know, not complete control, but enough to where we can kind of make some bigger life decisions and hopefully influence the outcome. Not in terms of trying to have a really long life. Like, I don't care to be one of these people that you hear about in Silicon Valley that says they want to live forever or they want to live to 150. that's not my goal. I think for me, it's how can I have a great, more of a health span, not really a lifespan. And that just means why I am alive, making sure that my body's functioning optimally and I feel good. I have a solid mind. And then, yeah, of course, kids come into play where you think like it'd be great to be able to grow older with them, especially because I'm an older dad. So that was kind of my whole journey around the health and nutrition and fitness aspect of things. I've always been trying to pay attention to that stuff. Now, of course, I'm not perfect. So I've definitely done things that damage the body, like my podcasting days when I was drinking lots of beers and things like that. So that was kind of part of our shtick and part of our show. But that's been a piece of it. And the other piece of it on the meditation side is I just realized that, and we're in the valley, and being inside of San Francisco, and I'm sure you probably feel this as well, it's like you're just surrounded by entrepreneurs and ideas, and there was a pretty toxic culture in terms of our kind of work ethic and just like pulling these all-nighters. And of course, all-nighters are fueled by pizza and beverages that stimulate you. And I just felt this natural burnout, and I just felt this being overstimulated, not sleeping as well. And I was like, gosh, I need to find a way to help people find a little bit of balance. And meditation for me, there's a few different ways to kind of pursue it. It doesn't necessarily have to be because you want to become this, you know, enlightened Buddha or something. It can be just for, you know, sitting and enjoying a break from your own mind, which we all kind of, you know, churn on nonstop and find ways to tear ourselves down. Sometimes we're our kind of worst enemy in that regard. And so, you know, meditation has been a way to just find a little peace and a little break. And then hopefully some of that starts to peel off into everyday life and you start finding a little bit more space throughout your day.
It's an interesting, you know, while you were saying this, I was thinking about, you know, my time with you over many years is I found that you're driven by compulsions which become obsessions, and then that lead to new ideas and new companies or new direction in your life. I think, you know, the tea is a perfect example. I mean, you're the one who got me into tea in many ways. You know, I didn't really care about pu'er till you gifted me some, and
that's great.
Now I'm just obsessed with tea, and you know, it's like always looking for something new to try in tea. Now, where does that come from? Like, where does this compulsion inside you come from? Like, was it when you were growing up as a child, or was it like you've always been like this, or has the industry, has the Silicon Valley made you more compulsive and intentional about things?
It's funny, as I always found myself to be a curious person as a kid, always getting in trouble in the garage. My dad had a garage where he was a woodworker, and so we had all different types of tools and saws and just everything you could dream of. And he taught me how to use a lot of them. And some of them were obviously off limits because like table saw in a child is not a good idea, but I could go in there and use the jigsaw anytime I wanted without him being there. He didn't care. That's totally safe. So once you're properly trained. So, you know, I remember going in there as like, I don't know, probably 12 years old, 11 years old. And my family was kind of lower middle class, so we didn't have a ton of cash. And I remember Nike Airs being like the cool thing at the time. And I was like, oh man, these Nike Airs, they have air inside of them. But I couldn't afford the ones that actually showed you the air bubble on the side. Mine said Nike Air on them, but they were closed, so you couldn't see that they actually had an air pad inside of them. And so I was thinking like, gosh, like I wonder, it says air, there has to be an air pad in there. And so I went in the garage and cut my shoe open with the jigsaw, just so I could kind of get into the inside of it. And indeed, there was an air pad inside of the sole. And I knew I'd get in trouble by my parents because I cut my shoes open. So I figured, well, I know my dad has some springs. I'm going to go and put some springs in the back end of this and hot glue them in so that I can jump and hopefully dunk like Michael Jordan. And so that was kind of like my grand plan. And so I've always been one of these people that have just like loved to try out new things and discover new things and tinker. I think that's kind of played into everything that I do on the technology side. When I first got introduced to computers, I remember the first thing I did was I learned how to format disks, and then I just formatted my C drive, and I had no operating system, and I was like, my computer wouldn't reboot. And I was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And I just wanted to read through the computer manual and figure this thing out. And then I discovered modems and bulletin board systems. And it was like all these things that were new and exciting. And I think you're right. Like when I find something that that kind of gets me and piques my interest, I want to go really deep into it. And so, you know, that can be my passion for tea, where I went and got and became a certified tea master. It can be things like doing cold ice challenges, like through the Wim Hof Challenge, the 10-week program where you submerge yourself in ice up to your neck for like 15 minutes and kind of trying to push your body to these extremes. I'm really passionate and can go really deep or enjoy going really deep on individual topics.
Is this because you want to learn, or is it you want to see what your limits are, both intellectually and physically?
I think it's just because it's exciting to me. I don't necessarily set out to learn something. I don't look at it as like, well, I need to add this to my list of things that I understand. I just think that, like, I'll give you for an example. Like yesterday I ordered 100 what they're called mushroom plugs. And what they are is they are these little plugs that you drill into a tree trunk, and then you push these plugs in and you seal them with wax on the outside. And then in the springtime, some of these will inoculate and turn into full-on mushrooms. So I've been looking at the medicinal effects of a mushroom called lion's mane, which is really great for cognition. And they actually use some of the stuff to treat Alzheimer's patients. And it's just been this kind of brain-enhancing mushroom. And so in my backyard out here in Oregon, I've got a couple tree stumps that have been kind of, you know, sawed down and abandoned because they've tipped over or whatever. And so I'm going to go, and I bought 100 of these plugs, and I'm going to be going out there in the next few days and drilling in and kind of pushing these plugs in and seeing what happens. But for me, it's just like, that sounds amazing. Like to go out there and like let nature take over and figure out how to grow these mushrooms on my own and hand forge in my backyard. I don't know. I've just kind of been attracted to things that require you to use your hands and get in there and do something that we just take for granted. Like it's so, I could just go buy lion's mane at the store and I get that. There's something that feels special about just kind of doing it on your own.
Wow. That's a new thing. So I'm pretty sure I'll see something about that. Or maybe a new company from you around that.
So. Yeah, exactly. Actually, a buddy of mine was like, he's been doing these mock-ups for the, like these 3D indoor growing mushroom little habitats that he's going to do a Kickstarter for, which I thought is funny. But yeah, I mean, I think that applies to, it can apply to hobbies, but it can also apply to more serious things. Like I remember when cryptocurrency first came in the space, that was something that I jumped into, you know, pretty early on. And it was because this idea of just something new about it, exciting. I watched a little video that someone had put together talking about the future of digital currencies. And I kind of bought into that. And so that was what led to me getting into that space and then doing some investments. Like when I was at Google Ventures, I invested in Ripple's early round through Google. And so it was like that natural curiosity that just led into something that was actually a professional thing as well.
You know, one of the things which I love about you, Kevin, is that you always stay pretty optimistic about a lot of things. It's been an interesting time in Silicon Valley where our technology industry, not just Silicon Valley, it's just like there is a lot of cynicism, there is a lot of anger, there is a lot of people are kind of, you know, skeptical of, you know, technology in many ways. I mean, in your life, you know, you've been through so much, you know, ups and downs, both publicly and privately, both from your, you know, as an entrepreneur and as a person. How do you stay positive about these things all the time? I'm always impressed by people who can find good everywhere and positivity everywhere.
I think that there's a couple things. One, you have to frame failure in your brain as just this idea that you've learned something. And if you can take any failure and walk away with something where you say, this is what I've learned and this is what I'm going to carry forward and do differently the next time, I don't think of that as like a negative thing. Like in watching my little girl walk for the first time, she's failed thousands of times, like just like getting up and figuring out how to walk. That's the nature. And that's how we grow actually is by learning these little micro things over time. And that can be how you manage people. It can be how you deal with layoffs. It can be all these different things that I look at it as, okay, I had to go out and lay off 25 people. It was brutal. It was heart-wrenching. People were crying. It was very difficult. But I learned how to have a little bit more compassion. I learned what I did wrong in that situation and some of the things I said that I wish I would have reframed to make things easier. And like, that's actually a skill. It's a horrible skill to have to go through, but it's something that I learned, and that applies to pretty much every aspect of business and in life when you fail. So that's one piece of it. And the other piece of it is I just consider my life a movie. I like to think of, like, when I'm looking out through my own eyes, this is my time. This is my movie. Like, let's go crazy. Let's have fun. Let's break a lot of stuff. Let's try new things. And I think that if you can just realize that, I mean, there's all the men on my father's side have died from cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, stroke, things like that, relatively early. And my dad had to have a quadruple and a triple bypass in his 50s and then again in his 60s. So I know my time is limited, and I just want to, I hope to avoid those things. And I'm trying my best through a variety of different doctors and exercise regimens to avoid those things. But, you know, just knowing that just the clock is ticking, like, why get held up in our own brain and say, like, oh, I can't do this, or this would make me look foolish if this didn't work out, or I don't want to be, and I won't be known as the most successful person, entrepreneur of all time. Like, there's no doubt I'm even in the top 1,000, but I hope that at the end of the day, my family will look back on me and some of the people that have followed my career will look back and be like, wow, that guy lived on his own terms and tried a bunch of crazy shit. And, you know, some of it worked, some of it didn't, but at least he had fun and went out just, you know, having explored the world. So if you frame it like that, then things just get really exciting. They don't get depressing.
Well, that's a very good way of thinking about it. I wish I had some of your positivity, especially around what's happening in the consumer and consumer applications. It seems that we feel, at least I feel, and some of the people I talk to, the energy inside of consumer applications has faded a little bit. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. When I talk about consumer apps, I think about, you know, obviously there's a whole wide spectrum of things that people use, but I think about social in general and just kind of where that's taken us and where that is going, meaning like the connections you have with people and the way that you share intimate moments or things to the public. And, you know, so you look at the big players that are out there. It's one of those things that for the next iteration and the next kind of innovation to happen, there has to be some space in that you just can't, you know, I don't think Instagram would have been as popular if it was launched 2 years earlier, because Facebook was already so popular and it was the tool that everyone used. But then there was a little bit of fatigue. It became a place where your parents hang out, not where the youth was really at. And then it got really bloated in terms of features and functionality. And then all of a sudden, Instagram came along and said, here's some beautiful photos, simple, just like photos that just look good with filters. And that just like resonated with a lot of people, and boom, it popped and took off. So I feel like there needs to be some distance and some space to let things get a little bit stagnant before we see another wave of innovation in that area. So I wouldn't surprise me if the next 2 to 3 years from now doesn't bring the next, you know, iteration of Twitter that is not Twitter, but another company that kind of like starts to pick away at their market share in terms of delivering kind of relevant real-time news. The one thing that I looked at and was definitely bearish on a few years ago, I wrote a Medium post saying that virtual reality was going to fail. And I think that there's certain technologies that sound really exciting and create great demos, but aren't necessarily ready for prime time in terms of just being that kind of order of magnitude improvement over existing things that you need for something to really take off. Virtual reality very much reminded me of like the 3D goggles when they came out for TVs, when there was 3D TV and everyone thought, oh, 3D TV is the future. And then you realize, well, it's kind of a slight improvement, but you know, it requires batteries, and all of a sudden then it sits in your drawer and nobody uses it. And it's been fun to see that people are kind of trying to push these things forward, but I still think we're quite a few years out until we get the right mixture of size, weight, computing power, hardware, all the things that are needed for something like that to feel like it's ready for prime time. But I generally agree with you. Like it seems like there's been more excitement on the kind of enterprise side and things like that than there have been on the consumer side lately.
I think a lot of it is, you know, I look at iPad and I just feel it is such a beautiful, amazing device. And especially the new one, it has so much power and capabilities. And yet we've not had, you know, I use it extensively for pretty much everything I do. I'm on it constantly. Like I use Procreate, I use Lightroom, I write on it, I do my email. I mean, it's basically replaced my laptop for wherever I go. There is a lot of shortcomings, but the thing it can do is pretty amazing. And yet, I feel there isn't that many apps which are taking true potential of iPad and running with it. You know, Affinity Photo is a nice one to replicate Photoshop, and just that's one thing. But like, there is just so much inherent capability inside of that device, whether it is like its GPS, its GPU, the camera, the screens. And I feel there needs to be more imagination on part of developers to kind of say, how can we really push and break this device, essentially, rather than saying, what can I build to sell on the App Store? And I think that's where I find that part of the cycle, you know, that where, you know, you actually try to consume everything hardware platform has to offer and go beyond that. I think that part is missing in many of our, you know, platforms right now, whether it's the iOS, it's the Android. I suspect a lot of this is because both Apple and Google don't really give a shit about like pushing the platforms. They just want to sell the devices. Whereas in the end, the applications are going to make these devices, you know, from, that's how I am thinking about it. I don't know if you view that there is a certain lack of imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the iPad, I think, is a great example because it's one of those things where most people in technology have one, right? We go out and we buy one because they're amazing devices. Like you said, the hardware is phenomenal. But it's like, if you had to take it away from me, I wouldn't go kicking and screaming and say, I have to have this device, because I can't point to any one application that is so different and so compelling that it's a must have. Now, for me personally, it tends to be entertainment related. So my iPad's great. You want to watch Netflix in bed, or, you know, catch a Warriors game on YouTube TV, which is great. But I think that some of the innovation that I've seen lately that does excite me is actually what happens at the cloud level. I think a lot of the machine learning and AI stuff that is being applied, especially around photos, is interesting. I love the Google Pixel phone, the latest one. It just is amazing at portrait mode. And I know that if you're an iPhone listener out there and you think like, well, I have portrait mode on my actual iPhone, you'll notice that portrait mode is one of those things where they're using two lenses on the iPhone and they tell you, okay, move a little closer, back up a little bit, move a little closer. And you have to get this right mixture of distance between your object and, you know, and then you finally hit the button and it captures it and it kind of blurs out the background. And sometimes, you know, if there's a glass in the photo or something else, it doesn't get it right and it doesn't look good. Google said, okay, forget that. Let's just use the standard camera and then take the photo, then put the photo into the cloud, into Google Photos, and then process it. I think they do it on device now. Process it on device with machine learning, and machine learning will tell us where the edges are, where to blur it, how to, you know, remove blemishes, things like that. And it's amazing. It's starting to work so well. So, I mean, that's one example of kind of machine learning applied to photos that does something that would normally have taken us a long time in Photoshop or something else. I'm excited to see, okay, what else is there that we can do on the machine learning side that creates a better outcome with kind of what we already have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's definitely I'm always excited about new developments in imaging, for instance. It's like one of my favorite areas to not only indulge in, but also invest in as too.
Well, you're a professional photographer. Like, there's no doubt about it.
I'm not really a professional photographer. I love photography.
Everybody needs to go check out Ohm's Instagram, because your photos, I've told you this in person like a few days ago, you need to like start selling these photos. They're amazing.
Well, I have a really good day job, which is, I will take that under consideration. So let's talk about your favorite topic. And my favorite thing these days is all the buzz around podcasting. It seems like everyone is doing it. Hell, even I'm doing it, even though this is my second time trying to do it. I did podcasting back in 2005, 2006 timeframe, but unfortunately, I got bored with it and stopped doing it then. Yeah, there's a current theme in my life. I get bored with it. You know, what do you make of the fact that, you know, Ringer is making $15 million a year from podcasting? You know, you started doing Dig Nation like so long ago, and, you know, when podcasting was like not really a thing, and it became, and like almost a decade has gone by. Does it excite you? How are you thinking about the current state of podcasting?
Well, there's a couple things. I think that it's been really cool to see this resurgence in podcasting and actually real advertising dollars flow in to the space. When we were doing Dig Nation, we were very fortunate that we were able to convince, you know, the GoDaddies of the world and some of the other advertisers to spend, you know, meaningful, not mass, not dollars like people are spending today, but enough to where we could pay the bills, and it was a great little business. But it is really cool to see all of these independent content producers come online. The issue that I have, and that I'm excited for someone to figure out, which is actually was the reason I was excited to see Google launch a podcasting app, their own podcasting app on Android. I don't think they have it out on iOS yet, but the excitement that I have is around discovery. Like, no one has done discovery correctly. And because there is so many shows out there now, I subscribe to obviously, like, you know, 20, 30 different podcasts, but I don't know quite where to direct my attention because there's so many new episodes getting published. You know, you'll sit there and you'll be like, okay, wow, it's been a couple of weeks since I listened to a podcast. There's 20 new episodes from a variety of different shows. Which one, you know, where do I decide to put my attention? And when Google announced their podcasting app, I was like, okay, great. Now someone, like we mentioned earlier, someone will be applying this kind of machine learning to this and start to make smarter recommendations as to which shows I should actually tune into. So I think if someone can figure that out, if someone can take the, you know, I'm sure at this point, like hundreds of thousands of new episodes that are getting published every single day and find me the best content, that's pretty exciting. I also like that it gives anyone a voice. Like, there's this idea that with very minimal hardware, I mean, you and I were talking about doing this show when we were in face-to-face a couple days ago, and you're like, hey, I'll just pull up my iPhone and hit record. You know, the fact that you can just do that and have something online in a matter of minutes is amazing. And there's tools like Anchor. I think Anchor is a great app that I met the founders here a couple years ago, and they've really streamlined the podcast creation and made it just a few taps on an iPhone to actually publish out to iTunes and everywhere else. So things are getting a lot easier. We have more people that are turning into hosts and hopefully bringing great content out there. So yeah, I'm excited about it. And it's been fascinating to also watch how people are creating these more of these dramas and kind of documentaries around this content as well. That didn't used to exist. So seeing that, like, longer form content still has a place in the world, especially given that we live in this kind of like Twitter snack culture where everything is in, like, you know, 30-second clips. I think it's great that we can do long form and it's still really popular.
You know, one of the things which is like awesome about podcasts is the fact that you can get so much variety and it's on demand. And I think when I see podcasts, I think of it as like what Netflix is and YouTube are to video. I think podcasting is to the radio, you know, services. Mm-hmm. And I think I listen to NPR, except I can't listen to NPR live. So a few of my shows, which I will put them on, and, you know, they'll play in the background. Actually, they play in the background on my HomePod, and I just listen to them while I'm doing other stuff like answering email and stuff like that. So the ambient nature of audio or voice is important, except I agree with you. I think all these, you know, guys are not doing a great job right now. I think both, if Apple wants to sell more HomePods, the key should be music and podcasting. And like figuring out better discovery in podcasting. But, you know, again, they haven't done anything there. And same is with the Alexa thing, the Alexa speakers being everywhere. I mean, there's just is a, like today we are in listening mode on podcast, and it's only a matter of time before it becomes, you know, the audio content becomes part of our everyday existence in terms of like whether we are interacting with these speakers or devices or whatever. And I think it's this whole thing needs a little bit more focus from somebody who who understands the audio aspect of technology really well. It's a shame that we haven't seen it yet. I always felt that, you know, guys like Nuance would do better, you know, voice processing, and they will become the folks who can help surface interesting content intelligently. This is an opportunity for someone, I definitely believe.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It is interesting that it's just a static MP3 file still, right? Like there's got to be a way that Google could go in there and say, okay, you're listening to, you know, an episode of Joe Rogan. Let's create an interface that as he's talking about certain YouTube videos or things like that, we can kind of like overlay that in a very interesting and fun way so that it feels a lot more interactive and just definitely deeper than just a standard file.
Right. Why are you podcasting these days? I know you've been doing it for so long. Aren't you tired?
Yeah, I did get tired. And I think that's why I took a break there for so many years after Dignation, is I didn't really feel like I wanted to get back in front of a mic. But I think that the things that I'm excited about these days are, you know, I have technologists on the show, probably one out of every, you know, 10 guests. The stuff I'm more focused on is just some of the biohackers that are out there, some of the folks that talk about work-life balance or living kind of a minimal lifestyle. Like those types of guests for me are kind of my personal side passions. And so having folks like that on, I enjoy the conversation, and I just think to myself, well, why not record it? Hopefully other people will enjoy it as well. So, you know, I'm interviewing someone on Friday. We're going deep on the current state of the union of cryptocurrency. And, you know, it's always just like, okay, that sounds interesting. Like I should probably have that guest on. And so I'm lucky enough to get some pretty decent folks on the show.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that episode. And as always, Kevin, great to catch up. I know you're going to be a dad second time around soon. So good luck with that. And hopefully you will share the photos and good news with us shortly. Thank you taking the time and talking to me and telling me what you think about podcasting, your own obsessions, and mushrooms. I mean,
yeah, I'll bring you some mushrooms next time I see you. It's always great to chat with you. I always enjoy your insights in this stuff. So it's cool to be on your show.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a good one.